Blog Talk Radio.
To the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. You're listening to the Hair Radio Show. I'm Kerry Hines. Now, today we have a very, very special guest with us. Her name is Peggy Dotson. Now, she is the woman behind UBC TV Network. The Hair Radio Show would like to welcome Miss Peggy Dotson. Welcome, Peggy.
Hey, Kerry. How are you?
I'm doing great. Well, listen, first of all, it's great to have you here. Now, we need to tell everyone what the UBC TV network is.
Okay. First of all, Kerry, I'm so excited about being here.
I
I am your fan. I think you're awesome. It's just really great. Well, UBC TV is actually, it started out as a concept for a TV network, but it has evolved into a broadcast multimedia company. With different divisions and things like that, so it's sort of like a hybrid between a cable network, broadcast network, and a technology company, online company like a Netflix. So it's sort of like my own creation, because of where we are in the industry. You know, cable is there, but it's not there like it was before. People are unplugging, and so people want the opportunity to view things on different platforms. By the way, which I have, you know, I was ahead of my time because I was pushing this years ago. And
many years. We're not going to say how many.
It's true. I know. We don't want to say how many. But, you know, and then people want, you know, to see original content. Content is still king. And queen. So that's what basically we're all about, is original content that is distributed over multiple platforms, including, you know, online, live streaming on demand, cable, live events, and different other little, arms of it, which I think we'll get into as we move forward. But that's what it's evolved into. Not just a network,
Terrific. But
more than that, yeah.
Wow. Well, you know what? We are going to get into every facet of this, Peggy. We really are.
Okay.
But let's go back a little bit. Let's start at
the
beginning. Now, share with our fans out there. Tell everybody where you are from and where you take care of business these days.
Okay. Well, the planet Venus. No, I am actually... Sometimes I feel like an alien. I'm actually originally from Arkansas, the great
state
of Arkansas. Yeah, Bill Clinton and DeMiangelo. I'm from Stuttgart, actually. Stuttgart, Arkansas, which is really in between Little Rock and Pine Bluff. So I grew up down south. And the first half of my life and the second half of my life, there's a third and a fourth part of my life that I haven't lived yet, so it's not over yet. But the next phase of my life I grew up in is in New York City. So, I am from Stuttgart, Arkansas. My mother and father were entrepreneurs. God bless them. They're my mentors. They are my inspiration. They both are with God, and they passed away. They are with me every day. My father was a master plumber, and he was a and that was revolutionary at that time because you don't have very many African Americans who are master plumbers in in Stuttgart, in a town, Stuttgart, Arkansas, which was, you know, racially divided. And my father and mother had businesses that catered to white people. I mean, we, you know, at that time, like you said, in the South, I was growing up, you know, the civil rights era had started, and the Black Panthers and all that kind of stuff, but we still had a lot of racial division down there. And, you know, so and it was very, you know, that's, you know, it affected me and helped mold me. And I started working with my daddy. I did a little bookkeeping stuff at age 10 in his plumbing company. And it just taught me discipline. And then at age 14, I was working with my mother. She, my mother had a restaurant, so we had a restaurant business kind of in our family. And I learned the restaurant business. I was on the grill cooking. I was waiting tables, answered the phone, you know, to take orders. And I answered the phone for my daddy, Dawson's Plumbing Company, and when the clients called and all that kind of stuff. So at age 10 or 14, I was, you know, learning the how to be an entrepreneur. And it's so important, I feel, that we have to teach our children at a young age about money and entrepreneurship, because it really has helped me to, it has helped mold and shape me and helped me to be independent, a self-starter, and helped me get through a lot of adversity that I would not regularly have probably gotten through the way that I have, and I landed on my feet, you know, because it does teach you discipline.
Yes, absolutely. I'm quite amazed when I hear a story like yours, in which both of your parents were entrepreneurs, and you helping out, because it does. What that does, in my belief, is that it channels that wonderful, it just teaches you without having to have been taught, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's almost like osmosis, you know, it just goes right on in there, and it's there. And you don't even realize it's there. And then, you know, as you start getting older, you're somehow, it kind of harkens back to that great foundation and introduction and fortitude that you just happen to have picked up along the way. That you know, it's just, I'm blown away by that something that you were able to get from your father and your mother. And look at the way that I look at it, look at the legacy that you've been able to, you know, to continue.
Also my spiritual connection to God, and you know, my mother and father were very into the church, and you know, it has extended through me. I'm a very spiritual person. It has pushed me to expand and learn a lot about different religions and cultures and things. But mom and daddy, my mother was like a mother of a church, and she was a gospel promoter. I met the Mighty Clouds of Joy, Reverend James Cleveland, at a young age because my mother, She put on gospel. She was a gospel promoter. And my mother was amazing. I'm telling you, my father was amazing. And they are both I learned a lot about that, and it helped me in my music, you know, because I have another part of me that's part of the music industry and singing and all that. And
you do have a beautiful voice for you guys out there. So maybe you'll give them a little treat, you know, in a little later on in the interview today.
We'll see about that.
I'm putting her on the spot, everybody.
I know.
Yeah, but I have to tell you, it is amazing. And so these are things that are just, you know, like I said, they're quite remarkable. And all these wonderful things help to shape the experiences that you have, and that you have under your belt, and kind of pushed you towards this wonderful, extraordinary entrepreneur in your own right. And so we're going to get into that a little bit. So you grew up in Arkansas, and then your family kind of moved up north to New York somehow, and you kind of, how did that come into play? And then where did this wonderful inspiration for this wonderful network come from?
Family. No, I'm daring. I'm a risk taker. My mother did not want me to actually go to New York. And but my father was an adventurer, and uh-huh. and you know they were still in Arkansas. I eventually moved to Texas, but there was one time,
a big difference between New York. We're going to be fair.
Oh,
about it,
believe me,
there's a big difference between New York and Arkansas, especially probably in those days.
Yeah, yeah. Well, at the time, you know, in Stuttgart, Arkansas, I did a whole bunch of stuff. I was like first runner up Miss Teenage Black America for our
wow.
region. Yeah, my mother put me in pageants, and I ended up singing
wow.
a lot and you know, competitions and things like that. Like
wow.
I said, at that time in high school,
mm-hmm.
there was still segregation, and there was a group called the Ricelanders that I could not audition for because I was black. But
wow.
So I couldn't get in there, but as far as vocally, I could out-sing all of them. I'm not bragging or anything, but like that. But my choir instructor, Jim Sparks, bless his heart, he took me aside and he taught me how to sing. I started out with Billie Holiday songs and things of that nature, and so I just ended up, long story short, doing a lot of stuff, and then ended up getting two or three vocal scholarships to University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. I got a music scholarship, a vocal scholarship, so I went there. I also got offered to go to West Point Academy at the same time. That same year, West Point became men and women together. It was just men, and they were letting women in because I was also very civically. I did a lot of stuff. I was student body vice president and girls state,
wow.
so I got nominated for a lot of stuff. So I ended up taking the music thing because my family's very
mm-hmm.
music oriented and all that, and went there, landed the head of musical shows and things like that. I was auditioned for a great a cappella group and got into that. So we ended up going, taking a trip to New York, the theater
wow.
group I was involved in. I was actually playing Mary Magdalene in Jesus Christ Superstar, and then I was in The Wiz. So I played Dorothy.
Wow.
I was in Dorothy and The Wiz, so we at the same time we went to New York, I was Dorothy and The Wiz, and Diana Ross was filming Dorothy.
In the movie,
that's
right?
I met.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was filming it, and that's the same year I met her, and we have a family affiliation, the Ross family.
Wow.
And from Detroit, my family on my mother's side is from Detroit, the Rosses, and so they work at Motown and blah blah blah, and you know, so I wanted
wow.
to meet Diana Ross. She was my inspiration, and I ended up coming to New York and on this theater trip, and fell in love with New York, and did not know how I was going to meet Diana Ross, but I was here, and I found my way to Queens, to the studio there, with a
wow.
friend of mine. I made some calls.
Is that the studio in Astoria, Queens?
I found my way to Astoria, Queens, to that studio. And I don't know how I did it, but I told everybody that I wanted to meet Diana Ross. And I did it. And I took the train there. Never been to Queens before in my life. Got on the train from Arkansas with one of my
wow.
friends. And we went there to the studio, and she couldn't go in. I was the only one that could come in to meet Ms. Ross. And so I got a chance to meet Diana Ross. I met Sidney Lumet, who's the great famous director.
Yeah,
yeah.
Of course.
And I met the Michael had just left because he was the Scarecrow. He had left the set. So I didn't meet
mm-hmm.
Michael Jackson, but I met Scarecrow, but the Tin Man. I think it was. Anyway, I met the other guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Michael was the Scarecrow. I met the Tin Man.
Right.
It was, you know, it was really awesome, and it was very inspirational. And she was
so.
She was
this
gracious.
Is when they were actually filming the Wiz.
Filming the movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
now,
because they called
full...
her Diane, and I'm Diane, and I booked our middle names, and
wow.
It's just that for me, that was like a highlight of my life. I said, if I can go to New York City and meet Diana Ross, I need to move to
That's
New York.
It. Exactly. Well, you know what? You're absolutely right. Now, this is a full circle moment. It's just so amazing to me because one of our guests, who's actually on this week as well, is Hinton Battle, who played, who's a like a several, I think he's won a, like three Tonys, maybe more awards for, and he played on Broadway in The Wiz.
He
with
did.
The role he originated, the Michael Jackson role was the role that he originated. So shout out to Hinton Battle.
Yeah, hey Hinton, I know Hinton. Hey Hinton, this Peggy, call me. Call me.
he is fantastic. So
he really is.
I'm just blown away that that was during that movie. Now, what else was coming to be? It was just released that NBC Television is going to be doing a stage version of, you know, a live program that they're going to be actually, you know, bringing back The Wiz, if you will, for the TV show, a live broadcast. They've been doing these big stage productions recently. And so it's, The Wiz is going to get that treatment, and I am excited for anyone to take on that. Now, so your big inspiration, one of your big inspirations, so we know is, she's inspired many, many folks, and I've certainly chatted with her daughter, Rhonda, but Barry and Diana Ross's daughter, Rhonda, in the past. But can you tell me, who were some of the others who inspired this great Peggy Dodson? And then we'll get into you.
Oh, my God. I have a many, in, oh, God, many people in different genres. You know, I, you know, Dr. King was an inspiration to me. And Reverend Jackson, who I just read at the Wall Street Summit. Just, you know,
and
current
hold it.
People.
We don't want to gloss over these wonderful folks and the kind of connections that that you felt with these folks. Now, talk a little bit about that. Let's start with Dr. King. You know, we are actually kicking off this wonderful celebration to Dr. King this week on the Hair Radio show, the Hair Radio Morning Show. And we want you to just kind of weigh in. What has Dr. King meant to you, Peggy Dodson?
Dr. King, what he has meant to me, what he means to me, is the chance to be all that you can be in a place that is equal and just. And I feel that is that was his life, you know, starting with African Americans. And he and the spirit to move forward in all adversities with what you believe in and what and your faith in God, you know, despite anything, despite anyone, he had his conversation with God and God spoke to him. And he went ahead despite what anyone said, because what he did had to be done, no matter if he knew that eventually his life, he'd have to forfeit his life here on this earth. But to have that faith and to accomplish, it's almost like what Jesus did, despite what anyone, anybody said, he knew that he had to do and fulfill what God meant for him to do. And I feel that we all sometimes get off track, and it's human. And we all get off track on things, and but you know the one thing that has kept me going in all of this is my faith, and me not giving up through all adversity, because this is not for the weak of heart. This industry, whatever we're in, as you know, it is that we have the deck stacked against us as a people. We don't own our images as much as we should. Stories are being told about us that we don't control. And to be able to step up, not maybe against, I won't say against, but to step out with the powers that be out there and say, hey, this is your story, but it's not my story. And to not be fearful in saying that, it takes a lot. It takes faith, because it's
absolutely
very scary. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to let the folks out there know, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and my very special guest today, is Miss Peggy Dotson. Now, she is behind the UBC TV network, and we're going to get into that very shortly. But I just wanted to ask you, Reverend Jesse Jackson, now there mm-hmm. is a great picture of you and the Reverend Jesse Jackson circulating out there around the internet, and we have that great picture for you, along with a lot of information on you, Ms. Peggy Dotson. So if you guys out there are trying to reach Peggy, you go to hairradio.com, and you'll see all of Peggy's information right there on the screen, along with some great pictures. And I'm told, Peggy, that you have some special words of advice that you are sharing exclusively with the fans of the Hair Radio Show.
Yes, definitely.
So, yeah, so we want to get you guys following our great interview today. Absolutely, this will continue. So you want to go to hairradio.com and read all of that wonderful information on Miss Peggy Dotson. Now, I'm ready to get into all about the wonderful UBC TV network. So you mentioned that this is a television network, as we just indicated, but what does the UBC stand for?
Stands for Urban Broadcasting Company, which is so weird. It also stands for Uganda Broadcasting. I have a lot of, and you know, I'm so connected to Uganda. It's weird. It's weird. I love my friends from Uganda, and I have a lot of people from Uganda that actually follow me online, and they love, you know, what I'm doing. I'm very connected to Africa, but especially Uganda. That's the name of the company, is Urban Broadcasting. I didn't want to pigeonhole, and people may say urban does, but it's, for me, it's urban multicultural. It's about culture, and I think that urban has been defined by others or misconstrued as something that it is not. Simply, urban is city, and rural is country. So it's urban means city, life.
Oh, okay, so urban is not just some euphemism for black. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So
that's how people categorize it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it means different things. It can mean different things, but for me, it's about lifestyle. And mm-hmm. when you look at it, our lifestyle is the lifestyle. Lifestyle is how you live, where you live, and that's mm-hmm. what UBC is all about. And it embraces culture. So that it's not a black thing, it's not a white thing, it's all us together. I guess you could say that.
I like that. So the U could stand for us. Wonderful.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, Peggy, tell us about some of the wonderful projects that you're kicking off at UBC.
Well, I have this has been a labor of love for me. You have to measure and time things correctly. As you know, in this industry, to do a network, it's very expensive, and it's not easy, because once you get out there, you say, oh, okay, I've got 24 hours to fill. Oh, okay, I need advertisers. A lot of my colleagues who are out there now, who are just jumped on the air recently, it's that they've gotten a lot of gray hair, just by having the stress of doing that.
Yes.
Yes.
I can speak to that one.
You know, so my goal is to roll out, you know, to start the digital part, which I have started officially last year. We have a live stream channel that where we are getting ready. We have live stream, we have on demand, and we're actually getting ready to do something very special. We're getting ready to put out a whole lineup as far as original productions that we are going to be streaming. As you
wow.
know, streaming is really big right now in NBC, Netflix, everyone's jumping into that world, which for me it's there's still a major cost, because you can't just go out and just do it anyway. You still have to have that broadcast quality to that in order to bring on the advertisers or the sponsors that you want to bring on.
Exactly.
So you have to, what we're doing is the original productions that we will be either live streaming or streaming will be edited, and then from there we back into cable. So we will have some things will just be totally online, and then some things will be shot for cable TV, which we are rolling out this year. This spring, actually. I mean, the date is closed, so I've got to like, blah, 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 say the date. And, but we will actually be in about 40 million households, and and we'll have channels, we'll have channel positions soon. So I know people want to know that, and I'll be making that announcement. We will be able to be on Time Warner, Comcast, and Dish Network, and DirecTV.
And you'll let us know. You'll come back and tell all the folks at the Hair Radio Show.
Yes,
okay,
most
so
definitely.
We can get an exclusive, guys. You've heard it right here. We're going to hold Peggy to that now.
Okay, I would definitely do that. It's going to be soon, sooner than later. It's going to be soon, but that's what we're planning on doing, and I'm very, very excited about the lineup that we have. The lineup for the live streaming, of course, is different than the cable. Some of them will overlap. For instance, we have a show called the UBC Mix, which is, I guess you could say, it's almost an evolution of Soul Train. And it's a show I created. A lot of the shows I created, by the way, and over years and years of research, years and years of research and marketing and all of that, and TV production and what I've done with NCAA sports, and that's my background is from live TV. So I love live television, but I love dance. I dance a lot. I love house music. I love all types of music. But
Peggy, I have to say, I'm not interrupting you at all. I just want you to absolutely let the folks know, and I want to tell everybody out there, they're listening to you and you're giving them this wonderful information. I just want to remind the folks, you're listening to Miss Peggy Dotson, who was our special guest today on the Hair Radio Show, and she's been telling us all about UBC TV Network. Now, I just want to tell all of our Hair Radio Show fans, if you want to find out more about Peggy Dotson, you want to go to her pages and find out how to reach her and find out more about UBC TV Network, we're posting everything at the hairradio.com website. So that's www.hairradio.com. And there you'll see, we're going to hopefully, Peggy will put up some more pictures and all of this wonderful, these wonderful things that Peggy's providing just exclusively for our Hair Radio Show fans today. So we are so excited, and we're going to give them all the information. Now, Peggy,
great.
I have to ask you. Yes, now, we got a little bit into it, but I really want to drive this point home, and I know that you can do it eloquently. Broadcast television seems to be going through a metamorphosis. It seems to be changing in a way. It doesn't look like it used to look. There's a whole lot of, flack about it not being more representative of the folks when we go outside our door. So individuals are saying that, well, gee, you know what? We don't control broadcasting. And when I say we, I shouldn't speak for folks, but I think what the message is that they feel that the people of color and the people who are representative of the world, the broadcasting doesn't really speak to those folks by and large. However, the internet, the new technology seems to be controlled, so to speak, at this time by the masses. So is there some, big, disconnect between broadcast and internet or technology and streaming and all of that? Is broadcasting changing?
It's changing because it has to. Somewhat. The big disconnect, I mean, that's one of the reasons why YouTube is so big, because you have more control over what you want to see versus what someone else thinks you want to see. And the big problem with broadcast is that it's big.
You don't have any control.
You just turn your channel. Well, it's big, so you have large organizations that have different departments that don't even talk to each other. You know, so they don't, and you have people who have major pressure on them to create programs because you have accounting people saying, this is not making any money. You know, it's not really set up. You have big public companies who are dividend-driven, and they're not content-driven. They're, you know, sports. People understand sports. That's an easy one. The multi-billion-dollar business, sometimes like Fox, that's what anchors, is one of their big anchors. And then you have American Idol. And then you have a formula. The problem with broadcast and cable, too, is the formula that's used in calculating what they think people want to see and what individuals go in front of the camera. If you have a formula, or you have a formula for a story that is beginning, middle, end, and that is very predictable, but that's what people want because they feel that's what makes money. And then you have a formula for people that you have, maybe if you may have three white people, you may have one black person, you may, it's gotten worse. I don't know. I don't like formulas. I don't even deal with a formula. We're out of the box. My goal is to be able to represent the way that it is and not contrive it. Even with the reality shows, they're not reality. They're contrived. They're combative. And a lot of the producers do that because they feel they have to create, you know, anger and animosity in order for that, in order for people to watch and then advertisers sign on. And a part of that is true, but it's not all true. And we're not represented at all. And, you know, and the time when we are represented, it's so contrived and controlled and stereotypical. And I mean, there are some shows that I'm not going to say right now. It's just people, it's just like, okay, this is a black show. Even with major producers that we know that do film, that when they get to television, they get into the formula. And they put this and that. Let's put this. Let's put some salt and pepper and some pasta and this and this. And that's the recipe. And that's and if you don't do that recipe, you don't get on the air. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem. There is a big disconnect, and it has to do with culture. It has to do with disconnect with color. It has to do with people who are in positions who feel they think they know who we are and they don't, who don't know the story. But in essence, they know, all they know is that we have the buying power, $1.1 trillion, and they want our eyeballs. They need the eyeballs in order to bring on Coca-Cola and Pepsi and Mountain Dew and KFC and McDonald's. I mean, those companies know about our buying power.
I love that. The word power, that's where all of this and what it all means. And I think that, and I think you have completely and eloquently stated what I believe is the disconnect. So going forward, we have the folks like yourself, UBC TV Network, Urban Lifestyle Programming, and you're based out of – you're based where? I just want to make sure we hit all of that.
I'm in New York. I'm in New York City. And, you know, in Harlem, which is the urban capital of the world, you know, it's New York City, and we have a new base that we're building in Las Vegas, and I'll talk about that at some point. We're going
terrific.
To be doing some really exciting things there with another division of the company. We're based here, but we're a global company. We're looking right now. We have some productions that we're working on, a major reality show with a major celebrity that we're I can't announce it yet. Yes, a
okay,
major
but you
celebrity
promised to come back
that we
here and
yes,
tell the fans
we have a
of
major
radio show.
Yeah, okay. A major celebrity that we're doing a deal with that we are going to. We're doing a reality show with them. We're going to be following them around, not just here, but we're going overseas. And so that is, you know, that's kind of like what – and some of the programs, the teasers and stuff will be available online. and the rest of it be on cable. And that's what I like. I like going between. I like the model that I've created because it gives me the flexibility to do things online.
You're not just doing one thing only.
Right. I'm not just stuck to cable, and I'm not just stuck, you know, on one just online. It gives me the flexibility to go back and forth with a show, actually. You can take part of the show, you can put it online and take another part of it, you put on cable. That way you go back and forth and you hit different audiences by that way. And we are a producing network, which is very important. I wanted to say that. Even though we are doing partnerships with other producers and production companies, but I am a showrunner and I've created my own originals, and I have a great production manager, Academy Award nominated production manager. He's done everything.
Wow.
Worked with Billy Joel. He knows music and knows sports, and he's just awesome. So it gives us the ability to be a producing network so that we can actually produce our own originals. We can create the originals, we can produce them and distribute them. And we bring in our own advertising and sponsors and things like that. And I have an agency that I'm also dealing with. But it gives flexibility for creativity, and that's what I wanted because I'm a creative person. I don't want to be in a box where, oh, I'm just a cable network, so I just got to do this. And I love my cable people, or I'm just online, so I just can't do this. No, I love my technology people, so I want both. So it gives us the opportunity to not only create wonderful kind of like reality shows, music events, things of that nature that we have some exciting things planned. I tell you, we are
ready
to step out.
You guys are
into
just
the spotlight.
Moving along. Now, I do want to ask you, Peggy, being a successful person out there in business, what words could you say to someone who's trying to follow in the great footsteps that you have trailblazed in terms of broadcasting and setting up your own network and working just all over the country with folks? What words can you say that just might be that great little inspiration that someone needs about now?
There's a couple of things. My inspirational words is never give up. My Jewish godfather, who's passed away, Burl Walk, always told me, he says, Peggy, never, ever, ever give up. That is my anthem. The other thing is learn as much as possible about the industry that you're in. Study it, go to trade shows, find mentors in the industry, which is what I've done. I studied this industry. I met people in the industry, just like I did when I was in the music industry. You know, I went to Luther Vandross and I said, Luther, tell me about the industry. This is actually what I did when I moved to New York, and I wanted to find out about the recording industry, which is a totally different industry just being a singer.
Right.
I mean, people think I'm a singer. I'm not digressing. I'm a singer. I want to be a great singer. No, if you want to be a professional singer, that means you are in the business of entertainment. So you need to know about that business. And I just went to every person I could talk to and had them tell me about the industry. And that's how you learn. And then you get mentors in that industry that are, great people who have high positions. One of my mentors, he's retired now from Fox, is Roland McFarlane, who is the only African-American executive at a high level at Fox in Los Angeles at Fox TV and Fox Studios. And he adopted me, I adopted him. And I would always ask him questions and ask him, do you think this idea could work? He said, Peggy, go for it. It's going to work because it's needed. So I always have mentors, even to this day, that I go to and to listen to and talk about things. And I see mentors and just research and just never giving up on your dream, but also just being flexible because what you see now may be a little different than what it really ends up being. I've had to be flexible in my vision with UBC. Like I said, I wanted a network, and now it's really it's UBC. TV network, but it's really just one component of it. We have media, and we have a couple other. We have film. We could talk about the film division. I have a couple of other divisions, and we have sports. We have some other things that have branched off, and we're also going to be building studio facilities. So,
wow,
you know, it's
a lot.
It's turned into a lot.
On,
yes, I do, and we need to talk about the shopping. You know, don't let me forget about that.
Yes,
that's something
yes,
that
yes.
that's
well,
something that
well,
I really want to discuss.
Yes, well, we definitely will. And folks, if you've just joined us, this is a very, very special interview today, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We've got a person who is just doing extraordinary things in the way of business and community. The Hair Radio Show is very, very proud to welcome Miss Peggy Dotson. Peggy, again, welcome to the Hair Radio Show.
Thank you.
Now, listen, we've been talking a lot about some of the wonderful business enterprises that you're involved with. And when we mm-hmm. talk of UBC TV Network and some of the wonderful programming that we can soon expect, we have to get into the shopping aspect that is about to kick off right
yeah.
here on this UBC TV Network. So tell
yeah.
our fans up there, tell the show fans about this wonderful ideas.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things that I think I'm just totally crazy, but that's all right because my Jewish godfather said you got to be a little crazy to do this, but
yeah.
I'm
I like
you, know, you know, the one thing that I see things that are needed and I try to move to create a solution for that, and that's one of the reasons why UBC has been gestating over the past couple of years, really gestating mm-hmm. and getting ready to and slowly rolling out, and people say, "When are you rolling out?" Okay, just wait. I got something I'm working on here. But one of the mm-hmm. things that I wanted to do, and I've always wanted to do, was to create a shopping component to my network because I wanted to create something whereas I'm not like the other networks where I have to really depend on all the advertisers and sponsors. I want to be able to groom my shows, but I wanted to create additional revenue streams, and that will keep the company going. And so I've actually created Urban Home Shopping Network. It is a part of – it's going to start out as a show, and then we're going to actually evolve to a separate thing. But it is for – it is an urban QVC. It's for small businesses, women-owned businesses, and people of color who want to gain entry into the home shopping network arena and cannot. I mean, as you know, Home Shopping Network and QVC they're starting to cater to smaller businesses because small business is the backbone of this country. And
exactly.
It is the backbone of this country, and people need to really understand
right.
that. And I want to do my part to help the economy. And in order to do that and to give opportunities to small businesses who actually want to get their products out on television or distributed globally.
Well,
so
let
I've
me
been,
just tell you, Peggy Dotson, this is such
yes.
an extraordinary business that you have launched. So I'm going to just take a quick moment to inform those folks out there, you guys listening right now, that you can go to hairradio.com, and we'll put all of Peggy's contact information there so that we know that you're going to be very much interested in being part of this wonderful, these upcoming projects and some of the things that she's working on now. So you'll just go to hairradio.com, our website. And we have a profile there with Peggy's information and all about how you can contact her to get involved. Peggy, I have to say to you, any final thoughts? You've been such a terrific guest with us on the Hair Radio Show today.
Wow. Well, you know, my final thoughts is I appreciate you taking the, you know, giving me the time to come on here and inviting me. And I know that we could talk for hours because there's so much going on right now.
Yes.
You know, my final thoughts is, you know, about UBC, go like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We have, if you have any questions about new shows that we have, you know, you're free to contact us as an email address, or we are looking for, you know, new shows. I am looking for content, and you know, if you want to join us or whatever, just, you know, like us. And we have to, all I can say is that we have some very exciting things happening and getting ready to happen. We are going to make a major impact in the marketplace.
Yes, you already are. Now, have to say, Peggy, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
I want to say that we have a, I'm making my step into the film world. We have a major announcement that we'll make later on. But I have a division called UBC Films, and I have been able to acquire major distribution in, you know, through Cinemark, AMC, and Regal Theaters to distribute urban films. And so that's, it cannot take on anything else, but, you know, it's like it's something that has to be done because we need more. As you know, right now people are very upset about Selma and the lack of Oscar nominations.
And
the lack of diversity. And, you know, that there has to be more diversity, and I think that's happening. Like I said, Reverend Jackson is making a lot of moves in technology and to help do that. And but, you know, there's only, besides my company, there's only one, you know, co-black. There's only, you know, there's very few black-owned companies that distribute films. So we are throwing our hat into the ring. And so we will be doing that. And I have some, that's another division that we'll be talking about over the next few weeks in reference to UBC Films and our, you know, entry into that marketplace of film production also, film production and distribution.
Uh-huh.
And funding.
Well,
I actually to have a separate funding arm that films urban films. We're looking for films 3 to 5 million, up to 20 million. We have funding for anything less, we have to talk about as far as development projects. But I have a funding arm for that. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, we are very excited. I mean, you have so many wonderful, wonderful projects going on, and we're just excited for you. And, you know, so we want to let the folks know that this is going to continue. Go to the hairradio.com website. Peggy is also going to put some special words there for you guys and read all about her and see some of those extraordinary pictures. And we're going to have you back very soon, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Peggy again, Peggy Dotson of UBC TV Network. Peggy, thank you so much for being with us on today's Hair Radio Show.
Thank you, Carrie. I look forward to it again.
Thank you. You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines.
Excuse me. We know your hair is important to you, so after years of sewing, braiding, twisting, locking, pressing, well, you name it, your hair is in need of restoration. So why don't you let the products of Dr. Peck's Hair Care RX start the process for you? We've worked tirelessly to bring you the perfect formula to restore damaged hair. Try our restorative cream, shampoo, and conditioner. All of these are high-quality products and proven to restore your hair's natural beauty and strength. Learn more about Dr. Peck's Hair Care RX at www.myhaircarerx.com.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now, we have a very special guest joining us today. His name is Angelo Ellerby, and he is the man behind the wonderful Double Exposure Media Relations. And we'll have him tell you all about that. Angelo, I want to personally welcome you to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Good morning.
And I want to thank you and your wonderful, magnificent team of professionals that bring this type of radio to your listeners. I want to thank you for your yearly support that you have given to Double Exposure Media. So bravo back to you guys.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know what? That's a great place for us to kind of jump on in and start. And I have to tell everybody, I mean, I remember going back to about 94, 95, I remember you were getting the key to, in Newark, New Jersey, the key to the city. I remember that, and we were invited there. Now, your team has always been wonderful to us, and they had already been coordinating things with us and getting us great guests and just really working with us. And I thought it was just marvelous. And we, you know, I've known you since then. I mean, that's a long time. And that, you know, I have to say, do you remember that event?
Yes, I do remember it. I come from the greatest city in the world, the city of Newark. And Newark has been so gracious and so kind to me over the years as a teenager to now at 59 years old. The city of Newark has been my source of energy. It has enlightened me. It has educated me. It allowed me to receive an education. It allowed me to live in Paris, France. It allowed me just to grow and be the individual that I am today. It is the city of Newark, and particularly as the city was overseen by what I think of as one of the greatest mayors of all time, which was Sharp James and Ken Gibson, who was very supportive to my career. I have received about maybe 9 keys to the city of Newark over my tenure of being in the business. And particularly that one stands out to me because it was about a youth organization that I was a part of and continuously being a part of the city of Newark, because I just think that it's a wonderful city that is not viewed in the positive light it should be viewed, a city that has gone through struggle and turmoil, but it stands on its own. So I love where I came from. I love every year, and I love the environment and all the things that the city of Newark taught me as an individual.
Absolutely, and I certainly echo that, being from originally from Philadelphia, but living in northern New Jersey, I completely echo that, and have been to birthday parties with the mayor, Sharp James, and all those wonderful folks back then. Just love it. Now you've been doing this for quite a while in terms of you created Double Exposure in about 1972, but you've been part of the entertainment industry for quite a bit. So how did that all come about? How did you even get into the entertainment world?
I started modeling at a very young age and doing fashion shows in the city of Newark. And Newark has a engine of fashion shows that was very prominent in the city. We lacked the cultural entertainment in our city, and we did what we knew how to do, which was to get on the stage and to perform as models. And so there was just a circle of many fashion shows that took place throughout the city of Newark. I was quite innovative, I think, in my presentations and going out to another great city, which is New York City, and bringing over the Beverly Johnsons, the Mons, the Alvin Ailey Danton, Carmen de Lavallon, Joffrey Holder. I would bring culture back into my city, because I thought that we deserved to have culture. We were so deprived from just the lay kind of things that we did there. And so I began to cultivate my city by educating them about things that was totally once removed from them. And so I brought opera, and I brought classic, and I brought all this kind of different experiences within the city. And the fashion shows was something that I just enjoyed doing. I started out modeling, and then I got into design. My clothes sold in John's department store in Milburn initially, and then I went into Bloomingdale's and Lord's and Taylor's. It was like one of a kind. I did evening clothes. I adapted on to that whole environment in terms of apparel, and I didn't go to my high school prom. I stayed in the basement of my mom's basement, sewing and making about maybe 400 prom dresses for the schools within the city. My mother was a totally no-nonsense kind of lady, and she wanted all of us to have it was 4 sisters and 2 brothers. She wanted all of us to have the fortitude to make your own money. And she taught me at a very early age about sacrifice, and you're not going to get everything that you want. And the only way you're going to get what you want is that you work for it. And she gave me the opportunity to work for it. She didn't give me anything. She did not push a button, and she didn't make life easy for me. She gave me life skills that I still use today. My fortune comes from my mother's teaching. My artist development program is from my mother's teaching. So I listened to her wholeheartedly, because I knew that she loved me unconditionally and she only wanted the best for me. But I think back when I was young, I always questioned and always thought, where's this lady coming from? She made me at 16 years old pay rent at $600. I didn't understand where that was coming from. But because my mom had an eighth grade education, she came from the southern part, she had to teach me what was taught to her. And so these life skills that she taught to me was things that I teach now to the Mary J. Blige's and the Alicia Keys of the world, because they were survival skills, and it took me through a survival cycle. And so I applaud my mother still to this day and my sisters and brothers, because they gave me the freedoms to be who I was and who I wanted to be, and they allowed me to go out and experience life at a very young age, and always willing to support me financially in all other respects. So that city of North will always have a place in my heart. I was very instrumental in warning young people, particularly back in the 80s when there was the epidemic for HIV and AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
We were looked at as a people, as animals of disgust, of discouragement. All of the fictitious stories were coming back that it was a black disease and the whole of the bit there. And I was really, really shot out over that whole thing of how it was being portrayed that we as African Americans were carrying this disease. So I began to educate myself about the awareness of this disease, because it was killing so many of my friends. I wanted to find out about it. And so I found out a great deal about it, and I began to teach people who were around me the importance of having the knowledge of it so that they could become catalysts to educate people. I remember when I was very, very young back there in the 80s, a group of my friends would come over, and I was working down in the basement of my mom's house, and she clearly did not have an understanding of what AIDS or HIV was about. And I was serving these people out of her cups, and she went completely, totally off. And after she went off and they heard what she had to say, I sat down with my mother and I said, Ma, it is now time that we all sit together, and I begin to educate them, my brothers and my sisters and my mom. And then I did a fashion show that allowed us to raise not just the consciousness and the awareness of the education of the disease called AIDS and HIV, but my family was now a catalyst, and they understood it. And so we did a two-part fashion show.
Wow. I was just going to say, it's just amazing, because as recall this, I'm thinking back, and I said, oh, my gosh, I actually remember why a lot of folks reacted like that, because the media scared the living crap out of us. It really did.
Yeah, but what we did is that we had a fashion show, and it was a fashion show with a two-parter, one in the morning and one in the evening. The first one was hosted by Gene Anthony Ray. Back in that time, he was the dancer on
stage.
Yes, I
remember, yeah.
And then Carl Anthony Payne, who starred on The Cosby Show and some other shows at that time. And we brought in, like, Heavy D, we brought in Salt and Pepper, we brought in all the big acts.
Wow.
We wanted to make sure that we had education through AIDS and through entertainment, because we knew that the kids. But in order for the kids to come to the show, they had to spend 45 minutes with an instructor before coming into the show to learn about HIV and AIDS.
Amazing.
So this was at the Robert Treat Hotel. They facilitated about maybe 2,500 to 3,000 people, and then that's what we did. And then they came and they saw the show. And now the 8 o'clock show was hosted by Susan Taylor, then the editor-in-chief of
Essence
Magazine.
Right, yeah.
And the veteran, and the veteran actor Antonio Fargas, better known as Huggy Bear. They were the hosts. But we brought Beverly Johnson, we brought Iman, we brought the Alvin Ailey dancers. It was everybody that was somebody in that room based on education.
Wow.
And I did the same thing for those people who were paying $50 and $40 to come in. They had to get educated as well. Tables set up about AIDS and AIDS education and the whole of the bit. So I've always been in the forefront of making sure my people were educated about things that I know that was plaguing a community and they were just totally confused about. So that's my plight, and that's why I have that kind of tie to the city of Newark, because I knew that we were being deprived. And then I had the pleasures of meeting an incredible lady that's still a part of my life to this day, was Dionne Warwick. Dionne,
yes,
at that
yes.
time, was one of the first African-American celebrities to put her arms around HIV and AIDS. She didn't care about if it was going to affect her. She was caring about her people who looked like her. You know, you had Liz Taylor, and this whole thing with HIV and AIDS didn't really make any sense to that white world until it began to plague their community. And then when Mark Hudson came out and they said that this is what he had, that's when you started to have the world concern of HIV and AIDS.
That's when it had a face.
That's when it had the staple in it, and it became that kind of concern for all mankind.
That's right. Well, listen, I want to talk about, you know, and this is wonderful work that you do, have done, and continue to do out there. Mm-hmm. So we want to applaud you for that, absolutely, from all
thank
of us here at the Harry Morning Show and just about everywhere. We have to say thank you. Now, I want to talk to you about some of the folks that you have worked with and represented. You have a clientele, I mean, a Rolodex that is just, well, if they still have Rolodexes, but you've got a lot of great, great folks that you've worked with. We have to start with the one and only Michael Jackson. What was it like to work with the folks like Michael and Mary J. Blige and Alicia Keys and Lionel Richie and so many others? But let's start with
Michael.
Man, what was that like?
I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't look at anyone as a celebrity. The only celebrity in my eyes is the man above. So I look at them totally why they come to me. You know, Michael was a very kind and very warm and a very congenial young man who had many serious concerns, and that's one of the reasons that he came to me. He was warm and he was dedicated and he appreciated the work ethic. He was totally 100% no nonsense. Don't let that voice fool you. He was a businessman and a very smart businessman. Yeah. I remember him always calling me Mr. Ellerby, and I would always call him Mr. Jackson. And he would say to me, hey, it's okay to call me Michael. And I said, hey, it's okay to call me Angela. And we both out laughing. But his people came to me on all the things that was being alleged that Michael had done. So I was doing damage control. And back at that time, it was really important that I always believe going back to the scene of the accident is the remedy for all. And so what I did is I created Entangent with a company, was called Body Sculpt. We created what was called the Children's Choice Awards. The Children's Choice Awards was a company that was supposed to give applause to those people who are fighting for nonprofit organizations for children. So we created this award show. It took place at Cine Center, which was then directly around the corner from my office. And I took people of notoriety, I think it was Governor Cuomo's wife we honored, and we honored the mayor of the city of New York, and then it was Michael Jackson. And I wanted to fill the auditorium up with children, and that's just what we did. Because he was being accused of wrongdoing with children, I wanted the world to see the glory and the love that the children had for Michael and that he had for the children. And so we filled this auditorium. We gave out these awards. The kids thought that Michael, I mean, they really did not think that Michael was there. He was dressed up as a garbage man, came out of a garbage truck, into the back of the theater, undressed, and came on stage, and it was the parting of the sea. Kids screamed, they yelled, and the reviews from every national newspaper across the country was phenomenal. So going back to the scene of the accident, putting him in the environment that he was being accused of being so guilty of, erased and embraced. So that was my theory with Michael Jackson.
I love that. Love that. Now tell us about some of the artists, some of the folks who've been on your roster, past and present. I've only named a couple, but you work with just about everybody.
Well, you know,
it's probably easier to name the ones that you haven't worked with. But you go ahead.
I adore Mary J. Blige, and I adore Mary J. Blige only because I always tell people it's not about an instant coffee. people come to me because they believe that I can make things happen. And I tell them that I don't serve instant coffee. I don't drink instant coffee. I like a brewed coffee. Whatever I'm going to do is going to take time. It's going to, you're going to have to endure this. You're going to have to take a moment to assess or reassess life. And with Mary, she went through a 24-week artist development program where I sat back and we did simple things like getting to know one another, sharing one another. I met Mary, I think she was late the first day that she was coming to see me. And at that time, when you pushed the elevator, you got to my office directly. And she had walked up the elevator. I'm about to go to lunch. She looked at me. She said, I'm here to see Angelo. I said, I'm Angelo, and you must be Mary, and you're late. And I'm not going to see you today. I'm on my way to lunch. So why don't we try this show again tomorrow?
Wow.
So we did, and she was an hour earlier the next day. she came into my office. I mean, it's just how it is. And these are,
right.
again, it's my mother's teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't tell you to come here at 12 o'clock. I told you to come here at 11 o'clock. So if you have a 12, then you need to get what you get at 12 o'clock. You got nothing. That was my lunch hour. So I went to lunch. The next day she came, and she said, have you listened to my music? I said, I really don't listen to music, and particularly I haven't listened to yours. And she said, here's a song that I want you to listen to. And it was like, if you look into my life and see what I see, and
yes.
And when that song came on, I got a call from my sister to tell me that my nephew that I had raised had just passed, died. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there with Mary, and I'm going to continue to go on with her. And she looked at me, and she says, what's wrong? And I said, oh, nothing's wrong. People are talking, and oh, a bit, we did. And she went to tell me of her experiences and the missing of her father not being in her life and the horror of the bed. And she held her head down, and then I couldn't hold it anymore. And then she asked me what was wrong, and I told her that my son had just died in the horror of the bed. And that was a bonding that is still cohesive to this day. Began to talk about everything underneath the sun. You have to find ways to get people to open up, and God has always granted me these ways, and this was the way that we became friends. We became open partners about life and life trials and tribulations, and she would tell me this. And then the next day we got into reading. I started with the Bible, and I started with various books and making her read and look me in my eye and posturing her in the chair and how you sit, and all those things became very important. And today I'm very proud of her, because today she's holding her own. She's doing what she needs to do. She is now fallen romantically in love with Mary J. Blige. She now loves Mary. She now respects Mary. She understands all of what Mary has gone through. She remains strong. And for me, that's everything. So it's not instant coffee. It's brewed coffee. It took time for her to understand and research and find herself to be who she is today.
I love it. Now, when you see her sometimes, I'm sure, on television or what have you, probably can recall or see some of those lessons that you were able to instill in Mary. You probably can see it on screen. And that must make you feel really, really good.
I smile. Yes, I do smile. I do smile.
Wow.
I've seen her do an interview. I think it was with Wendy Williams maybe a month or two ago. And it was really, really difficult. It was difficult for me because I just saw this young girl who was a part of my life just turn around and become this wonderful, blossoming lady. This lady of class and elegance, and this lady that was articulating her points of views and having opinions. Wow, that's exactly what I said. Wow.
Well, that's, I kind of want to talk to you about something like that. It's the artists who come to you. Now, so Angelo, walk us back a little bit. Tell us, so you get a call saying that, we want you to work with this particular artist. Do you kind of like just assess what they might need? Because I guess they all don't need exactly the same thing, but and you kind of have to teach them almost everything about how to relate to doing interviews. What about even their looks with their hair and fashion?
Well,
has that ever played a part in it?
feel well, my company is a one-stop kind of shop. I'm not going to come to you teaching you how diction and speech and all that, and you look like hell. So I'm going to tell you about hair. I'm going to tell you about makeup. You know, back in the day, I've always represented like creative people like Sam Fiennes and Byron Barnes and
all of these
makeup and hairstylists and the whole other bit there. So, and then Keith Majors, the photographer, always did my shoots for 30 years. So I would pull together a team of people from a stylist to a makeup artist to a hairdresser, and we would go in and create the image the way that we needed and wanted it to be. I remember there's a young lady named Patra. Remember Patra?
Yes, I remember Patra, of course.
Well, Vivian Scott.
She had the long braids, I think. Her hair was very long. I remember that.
Right. They flew me down to Jamaica, Kingston, Jamaica, for me to meet Patra. And when I met Patra, her hair was about as short as mine. It is an Olympic sport.
Really?
And what happened is I looked at her and said, I see braids. She flew up to New York City. We got braids in our hair. We gave her new clothes. We gave her new direction. And believe it or not, that's the queen of the
past. Well, you know that must have worked if I can remember 20 years later. I remember those braids.
Absolutely.
That was the first thing I said. Amazing. And you did such an amazing job. I remember the pictures that were out about her, promotion-wise. Just amazing. That look that she had, very unique, beautiful voice, just great talent. So you guys really did some work.
So we do what the job is, to create the image and the style. Now we have to create the person, the personality. Then we teach them the importance of business. It's business before is creativity. It's called the business of music. So we teach them who, what's, the wins, the where's, and the why's. We educate them. And then we let them go out there like a mother, like a father. We let them go free and grow and develop, learn the various challenges of life, and move forward. That's what the company is about. That's what Berry Gordy was about. As African Americans have always been resisted in the American community. And so Berry Gordy had to take his artists and find out why they were being resisted. So what he did is he got a modeling coach, someone to teach him how to pose, a designer. He got someone to teach him singing and voice and lessons. So I've done no more than what Berry Gordy has done for his day and his time that I did it in my day and time.
Amazing.
And had the pleasure
Absolutely.
Of meeting Mr. Gordy. I had the pleasure of meeting Mr. Gordy last year with Ms. Warwick, and it was such a pleasure meeting him for the first time. So
What did you say to him?
I looked at him and I said, "Sir, I'm so very honored to meet you." But Dion went on, Ms. Warwick went on to simply say, "She has patterned his whole company after you," and she just gave this long dissertation about what I do and the whole other bit there. And it was just a wonderful moment in my life that I will never, ever, ever forget.
Wonderful. Now, speaking of which, I do want to talk about the industry a little bit with you. You know, the artists that you have come and worked with over the years versus the artists that are out there now. Is there a big difference in the way that you used to, the folks that you've worked with in the past versus the current crop
artists? Yeah, I think what we're talking about now, and we're talking about the demise of the music industry, the demise of record companies. We at one time had 22 major record companies. We have two or three right now. We have a bunch of independent record companies. That the importance of the major record companies back in my day is that they called themselves doing artist development and was really called record development in my definition. And I think the thing that won me over is because I had a full servicing company that dealt with artist development. And I spoke about it negatively, public-wise, to the majority, letting them know that what you're doing inside of these record companies, you need to do more. I used to simply say, that's record development, that's not artist development. You're only supporting the artist because of the record. But it goes beyond that. You need to make sure that your artist can sit in a boardroom and orchestrate a conversation. They need to know how to dress. They know how to eat. You use their knife and fork. All these things are things that we draw our conclusions on before we even get to listen to music or sound, or if they can be a recording artist. So it was very important for me to teach them the who, what's, when's, where's, and why's of their existence, of longevity in this field. Today, we have, again, the think of coffee. Everybody believes that they have these innate abilities,
right,
that they have to be down with everyone. Their diction and their speech is not important. As long as people are understanding them, they don't have to dress a certain way. So you have lost the importance of what an artist is really to be about. In this day and time, I think we sell more image than we sell music. Our image is selling before the music is selling, and then you get the music. We're consciously aware as a consumer that we're buying image before we buy music. We go into the store, we buy on impulse versus buying on the subject matter of the music and the content and the lyrical content of it all. But I think that we're coming back around to what is real music and real artist development. People are starting to see, I think it's people like Kanye West that mirrors the negative example of what an artist is to be about. You know, I'm not asking you to run for the president of the United States, and you should be good. You should use your format or your platform in that manner. I can go on and on and on, and how you can get on the stage and be drunk with a Hennessy bottle and think that that's cool. We have to remember as artists, we are also mentors to people who are buying our records. We have to remember when we go out and we do these climbs, this is the kind of thing that sets us aside as a community, We have to be constantly aware that we are mentors, and what we go to do is a shining light to our followers. So there's a distinct difference in yesterday and today. I would hope that more people are more outspoken about the difference in right and wrong, but nobody wants to be outspoken because it's going to stop their check. When you talk about Chris Brown, all the craziness and what he has gone through, I have to ask the question, where are the people in your camp? Why are they not telling you the difference in right and wrong? Because they don't want their check to be cut off, and they want to stay employed and not be unemployed. But it should be bigger picture than that. It should be a bigger picture than that. You have to tell these kids the difference in right and wrong, because if you don't, they go living their life wrong for the rest of their lives. And this is something that is mimicked by the consumer, who believes that if Chris Brown did it, then I can do it as well.
That's right. And the media doesn't seem to help it in general in terms of broadcast media. You see them promoting, giving a platform to the negative behavior and reinforcing that negative behavior, and then it becomes a vicious cycle.
Well, it becomes that cycle, and this is something that has been the demise of our culture for so long.
That's right.
And this is
what
they enjoyed seeing us do, and it's not good. They don't
not
shine the light
all.
On those things that they don't shine the light on those subject matters that are not African American driven. I think you understand what I'm saying.
Oh,
here.
Completely.
And so
completely.
There should be an equal in treatment on all counts.
I agree. Well, listen, I have to also get in some of your current projects. I want to make sure and get that in before it's time for us to wrap. Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you guys are working on and some of the artists you're working with today.
I am really excited about where my movement is at this stage of the game. I no longer have to be boisterous to tell everyone that I handle who I handle. I like handling people who really need me. I like the young authors that I'm producing now and that I'm doing public relations and marketing for. I have this incredible lady by the name of Katrina Walker, who was married 5 times, 4 children, and became a self-made millionaire. So the thing for me at this point is really gearing her to a bigger audience, helping her to get her book written, dealing with the young gospel singer by the name of T. Rex Simmons, who has gone through his difficulties in life and has found God and wrote an incredible album. It's my job to position him and put him where he needs to be. I love the fact that I'm working with this financial wizard, Paulie Jones, who has written like 7 or 8 different books and comes back to me year after year after year to position him and market him. I love the fact of Paulie because he's an educator and he's teaching his people how to win with regards to their IRS and their taxes and how to save and how to enrich their lives. And then I love working with the incomparable Dionne Warwick because she is the strength and the light of my life. I've seen this lady go up and down like an elevator and always, always, always remain the same. I love her energy. I mean, we just finished celebrating her 75th birthday, and she continues to go on like she's 25 years old doing what she's doing, which is servicing her public. I love the new talent that I'm working with, a group called 4EY, which is an R&B group that is doing phenomenal things in the marketplace. And outside of that, there's liquor companies that I'm working with, and there's beauty salons that I'm working with. And so I have just tried to diversify double exposure and not just stay in the entertainment industry. And so those are the kind of projects that I'm working on now.
Wow. Well, I'm absolutely amazed. And as you were naming some of those wonderful folks, and a lot of have come through our doors, and we certainly are very appreciative for that. Now, I have to say, it just made me think, kind of harken back to what you said a little while ago when you mentioned 4EY, the future. Those young guys, I remember having them on our show. They were the epitome of class and sophistication for young men. And I had, you know, I come from a generation, probably a generation or two, that I missed that whole era of rap music or what have you. So when I heard this, I said, well, you know what? You know, I'm thinking audience a little bit older, but you know what? They were wonderful. It had to be one of my favorite interviews of all time. I was just so moved that they were so smart, so on point, so on top of their game. I never forgot it. So I just want to say thank you. You're doing your work. You're doing your work.
Thank you so much. Thank you, really, really. I really appreciate that. Artist development is so very important. My mother used to tell me first impressions are your last impressions. And people want to think, feel, and say about you before you open up your mouth. So first impressions are always good. And thank you very much because the boys are truly, truly a blessing.
Wonderful. So all the folks that you work with, and I know you are working and have worked with all these wonderful folks and have put them through all kinds of paces because I see the effects of, you know, what you've done. I see the work. And I remember going to one of the events that you had, Miss Marlo Hampton, and I never forgot. And I said, wow, you really put on an event, Angelo. You put
on
an event. Yes, you did. And I never got a chance to just thank you so much. It was just such a beautiful event, visually rich. It was just gorgeous. She presented just such a beautiful image, and what was inside came out, and you guys were right there front and center and coordinating the whole thing. And I just, you helped me also aspire to do my work better. So thank you.
No, thank you, guys. I thank you because, you know, with the thing, the quality of life is very easy. It can be difficult when you want to make it difficult. People come to you for a service. People come to you for branding. People come to you for your expertise. And you, as an individual, should be able to give them all of what they come for. So my thing is not just to rush it, but to take time and create for them, to position them for longevity. And so, yes, every I must be dotted, every T must be crossed. Yes, we must be at the front door greeting. We must have someone downstairs. Yes, we must have someone passing this. Yes, I must take time with my host and make sure that my host is informed about what we're doing. Those are the things that make real events. And yes, it should be attractive to the eye. People should walk away talking about how wonderful it looked, the good energy inside of the room. Then nobody should care about or even know about all the difficulties that it took for you to administer and make this thing happen.
I see. I'm just amazed. And I have to say, and I do want to shout out to your entire team, and especially the work of Ms. Tracy, who has just been someone who I've relied on tremendously.
Thank you.
So I just thank you so much. And just for you listeners out there,
Angela Ellerbe, I have to say, we would not have the success that we had here on our show without this man. So I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart, and we're just going to do some great things.
Listen, I just want everyone to know that I am celebrating 46 years in this wonderful business called entertainment. And as my thank you to your listeners and to the people in media, I'm having a series of beauty days in Queens, Woo-hoo. New York City, from the 13th to the 27th of the month of February. I'm asking them to come out and be supportive, come out to the salon, come get your hair done. All these things are on me. They're my gifts back to the public. And I would really, really, really appreciate if they just came out in groves and numbers to show their support. The first one is being hosted by Cynthia Bailey of Atlanta Housewives. The second one is being hosted by the 5-time Grammy Award winner, Dionne Warwick. And the last one, we hope, will be hosted by Mary J. Blige. We're also going around to a lot of the homeless shelters on the last one, and we're taking 10 to 15 people, and we're going to clean them up, wash them up, get them up, and prepare them for the workplace. So we're going to give them clothing, we're going to do hair and makeup on them, and we're going to position them to go out in this world to win. So it's my 46th anniversary, and this is the only way that I can say thank to give back to the public.
We've got to get them out to come out. This. Yes. Now, I want to mention this wonderful area, this wonderful location in Queens, which is where this event is going to be at the salon, because we want to get folks there. So I know that they can go to the internet to poshbylashandra.com and get the information. Is that correct?
That is correct. Or either they can go to dxxnyc.com, which is my website.
Yes.
All of the social media has it at this point. We want them to come out and support and just come in and feel beautiful that day.
Oh, can't be said any better than that. Well, listen, I will be checking in with you. We're going to be there, and we're going to remind folks, as these wonderful folks are there to host the event, to, you know, definitely come out and be part of these beauty days. And we're going to stay and follow very closely what you're doing. Angelo, I want to take a moment to
–
it's my pleasure to just say thank you again to the great Angelo Ellerbe, who is doing amazing things with Double Exposure, and just, you know, keep doing what you're doing. Can't say it any better
God
than
bless
that.
You.
Thank you for being with us. God bless you, too.
Thank you.
All right,
my
folks.
Pleasure. God
yes,
bless.
Absolutely. Folks, keep it right here. There's a lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to come. Stay with us.